Welcome, sports fans. William Hill Sports Show coming to you live from the Club Caliva on ESPN 94.5 FM. Like I said, we're coming to you live, but the podcast, you guys can always catch the podcast after the show. If you missed some of the show, it's at sportsreno.com and just go to the podcast podcast tab drop down and you'll be able to find it. So I'll be mentioning that a few times. I always forget to mention it, but people always say I missed the show and they want to, you know, and I just want to keep throwing that out. So Josh, remind me to say that a few times tonight.
So, yeah,
the podcast,
good.
The podcast.
No, you're right, Ken. It's something we take for granted, but it's been up there for a while. I check it myself from time to time as you, but what they do is they do a great job. They get it up there quickly, cut the commercials out. So obviously, if you just want to hear what we were talking about, it's a good way. It's usually posted within a day or so of us, you know, being live here. So, and they used to just have the previous one and that was it, but now they have like 6 weeks worth, so it's a cool resource.
What you really want is the opposite of that, is cut the show out and listen to the commercials.
No doubt about that, boy.
That's when the real, that's when the magic happens.
Man, if we could, yes, good point. So with that being said, our ESPN board guy back at the station said that he gets it up the night now. So it'll be up, you know, within hours of the show. So make sure, you know, if you missed part of the show or, you know, you want to rehash the show, sportsreno.com. That say, Josh Nagel, that's who was just talking from Sportsline. You can get all Josh's stuff on Sportsline too. So Josh Nagel on Twitter, Josh Nagel 1, and on Sportsline. Josh,
yeah, appreciate it, Ken. Yep, we got everything up there today: college basketball, NFL, you name it. But one thing I did, one specific piece I did today was, I'm sure we'll talk plenty about, but prop bets for the NFL championship games this weekend.
Yes, I have
prop
some,
bets
I have
are kind of my specialty thing. So they had me do, you know, top
good ones.
Bets for, I'm sure you got good ones too. But they said, hey, took a look at the menus, most of which just got, you know, freshly released today. They said, hey, take these menus, put your, you know, top bets up there and put it up there for the customer. So I did. So I've got a few top plays on each game. So if you're interested, yeah, sportsline.com and $10 a month for full access.
All right. And John the Hawk Stevens, independent handicapper, a master of a million things.
Oh, that's exactly,
I tell
right.
You what, John, I went to the baseball dinner last night and I sat right next to the new, not the general manager, but I think he had Jody Clark's old job for Bullies.
Okay.
And he just happened to be sitting next to me. And of course, we got on the topic of Paul Sonner, and boy, did we tell some great stories. It was really, really cool.
That's awesome.
You know, he's Joe Sonner's right-hand man right now. You know, Joe Sonner, Paul's, you know, ex-wife that actually is running Bullies right now.
Yes.
We were texting Joe back and forth, and I said, Joe, silent auction's coming up. How much do I have? You know, and she laughed and she says, Ken, this is Ain't Paul.
Yeah.
So with that being said,
exactly,
you know,
right.
You know, and then we told some great stories about Paul. It was really fun, you know, at the baseball dinner last night, and, you know, Bullies, and, you know, still going strong, you know. So
how was Estes?
Estes was great. You know,
he's
Sean
good dude.
Estes, I got to talk to him for a little bit. Pat Flurry, you know, of course, our buddy Pat Flurry played pro baseball for a lot of years, and you know, it's, you know, we can tell the Estes stories all day long, John. How many friends? Sean Estes, I believe, gave up what, 4 hits his entire senior year, something crazy like that.
He had a ERA under 1, but then when you hear everybody talk about it, everybody took him deep.
Everybody,
and there's only one guy, Travis Schweitzer.
Yeah. Exactly. So
one dude owned him.
One dude.
And he's the one dude that doesn't say anything about it.
Yeah, exactly. And you always say that. So
yeah,
Travis Schweitzer.
Schweitzer's the man.
So I got to go up and talk to Sean. I talked to him for a little bit. I didn't want to take too much of his time, but I said, hey, do you know Pat Flurry? And he goes, oh yeah, I know Pat. And I thought, okay, maybe, you know, he's just a nice guy. He goes, yeah, Pat's the only guy, local guy that ever legitimately threw in the 90s. He goes, he was the local.
He nerd.
Yeah. I guess that's right. Excuse me, but I guess he knew Pat. But and then he said their paths
back
did,
then at least.
He said their paths did cross in the minor leagues and stuff like that too. And he's, you know, and then Flurry was talking. You know, I was texting back and forth with Flurry, you know, about Estes, and he's saying that he could hit. You know, he could certainly hit.
Oh, he raked.
Then he talked about a grand slam, and then Estes in his Q&A with Brian Samudio actually talked a little bit about. I think he said he took Clemens deep for a granny.
He also hit a granny in a shutout against the Expos. It was like a 16-0 Giants win. He did that. And I still remember, speaking of Flurry and Estes, those two locking horns in, I don't know if it was the zone final, but it was definitely the zone playoffs at Moana Stadium, Douglas versus Reed. And Pat got the best of them because of Schweitzer.
Yeah.
So it was those two, it was something back then. And Sean was like number 11 overall.
He talked about that.
Yeah.
Estes talked about that last night.
Pat was seventh rounder.
Yeah.
But yeah, Sean was 11th overall with the Mariners.
Left-handed, 90 plus with a breaking ball that was crippling.
His hook was out of this world.
Yeah. So great stuff. I had a great time last night, Josh. I got, you know,
Bobby Dolan dinner is fantastic. I've been to 10, 12 of them, and they were just – they're so much fun.
It was. You know, Lane from over Budweiser, you know, he's always kind enough to shoot me a couple tickets at the last minute. So it was very, very exciting. The one thing I have to share real quick, too, is, you know, they have this Lion Auction. I want, John, you're going to love this.
I know it. I already heard. Yeah. Kyle Beckman already told me.
Josh, there's a poster of the Wolfpack basketball team, and they all signed it. Mm-hmm. And so I put a bid in on it. You know, I go, oh, that's really cool. Because if we make a deep run, you know, I'll have a nice autographed poster, and memento. Plus, the money goes to support Wolfpack baseball. You know, it was donated, and so then I walked away, and I came back, and somebody beat me. So I looked at what I was really wagering on, Josh. Me and three friends get to go to practice with the University of Nevada basketball team, and it's just us and the basketball team. So I end up getting it. I have passes, John.
Yeah.
To a private.
Wait, so you won the auction bid on the wrong thing?
No, the right thing, but there was more to it than what I was
bidding.
Oh, gotcha.
That was additional stuff.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yes. And so I actually won. So me and three friends. So my friends need to start really kissing some butt right now to figure out who's going to be there. But yeah, so we get to go watch John, and you went with me to the football practice.
Yeah,
that one year when
Coach Poling's first year.
Yeah, and we that's when Doug Knuth came up and talked to us, and it was a great time.
It was great.
Great time.
It's great you have that inside information. And what's funny is when Kyle told me that you'd won that, he goes, "I know Mus wants to hear my thoughts on how
the zone
score against the zone." I was like, "Yeah."
I told him,
"I can't wait to hear it myself."
I told him exactly what I was going to say. Listen, Mus, I'm going to tell you how to beat the zone.
Here's how you do it.
Yeah, because he went on a big tirade, you know, a rant about social media. You know, everybody knows how to beat the zone, and he goes, "These people don't even know what a zone is. Yeah. A 2-3 zone, a 3-2 zone, a 1-2-2 zone, a 2-1-2 zone. Is it a high zone? Is it a low zone? Is it a pack zone?" He goes, "It's just everybody." He goes, "I'm just over it, guys. I know what I'm doing," kind of thing. And so I'm going to, when we go to practice, I'm going to say, "Mus, listen, I'm going to tell you how to beat the zone."
Yeah.
I'll say, "No.
What are you doing?"
I'm just joking, bud. I'm just joking. So with that being said.
Yeah, I don't want them to play Syracuse anytime soon. If that's indeed their problems.
Unless the threes start falling.
If the three start falling, all bets are off. Yeah. But
he said, I read a great article about Wolfpack basketball today, John and Josh, and it talked about, you know, practicing. Everything they do at practice is planned. Everything. They scout practice and keep track of the stuff at practice like they do at a game. They said that at practice, every 3-point shot they take, they track everything. They said that they're shooting in practice a higher percentage this year than they did last year because they tracked it for every year. He says just for some reason when they're getting out there into the game flow of things, the shots aren't falling. You know, so you know. But I thought that was very interesting because everybody's saying, "Oh, they're taking too many threes." Just, listen, Coach Musselman's turned this program around, guys. You guys know that. We're at 17-1. You know, are we really so spoiled now that we're not winning by enough? I mean, we're 17-1. There's only two teams in all of NCAA football right now that are still undefeated. Two. There's only five teams, that still have one loss. I mean, come on, guys. Get off. These kids are busting their butt. And it's hard, John. And I used an analogy with Brian Wolford. You know, he was questioning me about, you know, this and that. I said, let's put it in perspective, John. Can you imagine going to the East Coast and playing a world tournament in softball at the highest level, then coming back and having to play league on Monday?
Oh, we're famous for getting beat by the donkey punchers on a Tuesday.
Exactly.
After winning an NIT.
Yeah, exactly. Winning a national invitational tournament. Yeah. You're exactly right, because we are still the team that everybody wants to beat. We get everybody, you know, Pat gets everybody's A-plus game every night. Sometimes it's tough to get up for these games, and I see what it's going through. Listen, guys, fans, we're 17-1. Who cares if we're winning by 1 or 10? Yeah. We're 17-1.
Exactly, Ken. It's one of those things where sometimes, you know, it just looks a little different. And, you know, the other night, it wasn't surprising they struggled with Boise State, who's having kind of a mediocre year. But we know they're well coached, have a very difficult home environment, you know, not far removed from being an NCAA tournament quality team. But like you said, you see this Duke loss at home the other night to Syracuse.
17-point favorite.
It just happens. And, you know, the Mountain West, I think, is turning out to be a little stronger conference than people realize. But when you looked at Nevada's play, no, none of us thought, you know, they're going undefeated anyway, but to see potential trouble spots, it was just what we expected. Okay, it was going to be your Boise State, your Wyoming. We probably didn't expect New Mexico, but that happened.
They're losing the New Mexico game in November.
But then you have some of the other ones that you wouldn't have expected either, though. You wouldn't have expected a Pac-12 sweep necessarily to go and beat Arizona State, Utah, USC. You probably thought they lost one of those.
On the road.
Probably, okay, no one would have been surprised if you lost to Arizona State. You know,
on the road or a neutral.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So instead, they, you know, sweeped all those big, you know, Power 5 clubs and then kind
of BYU.
Back. Yeah, exactly. And BYU's not bad.
UMass.
So it's one of those. Like you mentioned, Ken, I think it just it looks differently than people expected. I mean, Jordan Caroline's having a huge year, but I think by and large, yeah, we well know. I mean, I think compared to last season in particular, Caleb Martin's struggling a little bit from the floor. And sometimes it seems like they struggle to see what is the exact correct lineup. But there's nothing wrong also with winning games, as you've seen, on the defensive end. And, of course, it was nice to get out of there at Boise the other night with the victory. And you know, when you hit it with a walk-off three, that's got to be confidence-inspiring.
Yeah, that was – that was something else.
I lost my mind.
Cody Martin, not Caleb. Cody having the wherewithal just to say, all right, I'm taking this into my hands right here. We got a good shot. Here it is. Because what it broke down, their play broke down.
Yep.
So he had to improvise.
He was the third option on that.
Yeah,
on that
he
play.
Was. So it was, and he buried it, and he put that English, his body English on it, and it was.
And he just stepped right into it. Like I said, didn't hesitate.
It's an absolute huge shot, and it's winning by one in Boise. Is fantastic. There's nothing.
The team was. That team is. Boise was in first place in the conference.
Yeah, that's just that team is. You know, they obviously losing Hutchinson and they don't have. They're not the team they were last year. But going into Boise when they want to kill you and get the victory.
Let's face it, John. Oh. I think down the stretch it felt like a game Nevada wasn't, to me at least, watching wasn't destined to win. Only in that they had a working margin lead for a while, but suddenly Boise makes a rally with a few good shots and everything. But then. It seemed to me down the stretch, the last 5 or 6 minutes, one of those deals where Boise seemed to get every call, you know, every 50-50 on the fouls and the out-of-bounds and tough breaks. And it just seemed, okay, this is one of those difficult environments where maybe, you know, it's just not your night. So to be able to pull it out despite that adversity and some things, other factors going against you, obviously it's a good sign.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things that I see too, Josh. You brought up a good point right there is the pack is fifth-year seniors. Grown men. I mean, these guys, they've been in the weight room, and they're big guys. You know, there was some fouls called. There was some Boise runs into the pack, and we weren't even getting calls because we're not moving. I mean, we're holding our ground. That just comes from maturity and strength. And, you know, we would go up and touch Boise, and they'd go flopping. And there were so many missed calls in that game, and I'm not usually the one that really
wants. Both ways, though.
Yeah, but crucial. I think
there was a lot in the first half that went against Boise that I thought was questionable. If I'm going to keep it real.
Okay, well, Pack takes a 9-point lead into halftime.
Yeah,
so with that being said, I guess, John, I just – and I don't want to be the one to, you know, cry, you know, over sour milk, so to speak. So, but with that being said, the Pack escaped, you know, the road game at Boise, 72-71. They were ahead 40-31 at the half. The game closed right around 8. Total went to 143. Isn't that amazing, guys? 143. What's the final score? 72-71.
Another one, Ken, right on the number. You said a while back,
crazy.
The overs, the pack totals have been sort of misjudged, I think, from everything what we expected at the start of the year, too. But you mentioned they're like 80% to the under, where I think odds makers, everyone else, thought we'd see, you know, games in the 90s, 80s every night out. Instead, it's trended the opposite way.
One of these games, they're going to click offensively,
yep.
And it's really going to get ugly.
17-1 packs, 10-6-1 versus the spread, 10-6-1 versus the spread. But of those 17 games, only 5 have went over. 5-12 with 12 games going under. So we are playing lockdown defense. I remember when the season first started, guys, they couldn't make the totals high enough. Now it's almost like they can't make them low enough.
Yeah, if you're going to have one side of your team be consistent, you want the defensive side, obviously. And it's their offensive identity is still it's unknown, I think, at this point, which is crazy for a 17-1.
Well,
number 10 team in the country.
Corey Henson, you know, he just gets inserted into the point guard role. Recently, you know, Trayshawn Thurman
like
struggled a little
move.
Bit. So, you know.
I like Cody off the ball.
We just I agree with that 100%, John. I agree with that 100%.
I wish Lindsey was there.
We need Trey to just get his confidence back. We just need Trey to get his confidence back.
Yeah.
That's what we're missing. You know, Trey, keep shooting, guy. Get confident. Get confident, guys. Don't sweat about it. Don't sweat this.
The only thing you know you're going to get is a double-double out of Jordan Caroline.
That's it. Every game.
Every game. And you're going to get 18 to 22 out of Caleb.
Guy's a beast.
No matter how ugly it might be. But it's – yeah, you nitpick a 17-1 number 10 team in the nation.
Yep.
But that's where we are. And it's a good problem to have, I guess. But it's – that's where we are. I still think Jordan Brown's going to be heard from.
So do I.
As we go forward.
Yeah, I agree. He, and, you know, I – the cupboard's not bare after this year either.
No, I mean,
we got
all.
Some guys coming
not
in.
At all.
So, with that being said, tomorrow night, Air Force tip off tomorrow. It's a late game. I believe it's an 8 o'clock game. It's a
I think it's seven.
Is it seven?
Yeah.
Is it seven or eight?
I watched that whole dismantling
of UNLV.
I loved it. Oh my goodness.
Oh, I loved it.
They looked amazing there. We're laying 22. Is that right?
I was just going to say. I was going to wait for that. But
against the Princeton style offense.
7 o'clock tomorrow. 7 o'clock, John. You're right. Looks like Pac's laying 22 with a total of unofficially 140. Wow.
Oh, wow.
We're laying 22, so 140. What is that? I mean, 80, 60? 80 to 60?
Yeah.
Wow. So you're saying a team that just scored 100 plus against the Rebels, and thank you, Air Force, for doing that, because all these Rebel fans on Twitter that were bragging about, we're in first place and you guys are overrated. You know, how dare you go down to New Mexico and lose that game? Well, guess what? Keep talking, Rebel fans. Keep talking.
They had a point.
Exactly. But yeah, what's funny, but Kenny, this isn't surprising. I actually did this for betting strategy. I didn't realize just how long it was going to last. But you realize New Mexico, that was their final four game. They beat Nevada or whatever. I'm like, hey, fade them the next few times. And, yeah, they've gotten blown out every time. San Diego State the other night, -7,
Josh.
Beat them by 20. Yep.
Double digits. They're 0-3 since they beat Nevada.
Three easy winners going against them since.
Double-digit losses. Three in a row.
They said to take the rest of the season off. We got our payback.
Yeah. And then one of their players just quit.
Is that right?
One of their players, their big guy, just quit. He's quit. He's done. So with that being, I love it. So with that being said, John, you kind of let the cat out of bag a little bit.
Sorry.
Pack back at home tomorrow, 7 o'clock tip off. Two game stretch. Then they also have on the 23rd, they have Colorado State coming in, and then on the road, 129 at UNLV.
Colorado State's the only home game there's tickets available for.
Yep.
But I think 22 might be a little too much just because of the offense that Air Force does run, that Princeton style offense, and their ability to kind of eat up the clock, even though they put 108, whatever it was, on the Rebs.
It's awesome.
But that's the Rebs.
It's the Rebs.
Who cares about the Rebs? But
tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, John, 22 and 140. Where are you going with your cash? I'm betting it over, John.
I think I might go Air Force and over.
Air Force
You can win by 21 points.
That makes sense.
I think we score a lot.
We are so due to have an offensive explosion at home, guys. So due.
Saturday night, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm actually going to have – and, you know, Josh, you brought up a good point. Look at what just happened to New Mexico after they beat Nevada. That Air Force – they stormed the court like it was – they won – they're advancing in the NCAA tournament.
Right.
So, letdown game, bad spot. On the road, Nevada.
I agree. I like the over as well, Ken, because you mentioned – you say Princeton offense, that's fine, but it's not a four corner thing. It's not like they hold the ball. It's also first available good shot. So that's why can run that and score at a high rate. I think the total's a clip low. Way too many points for me to. And I think I can mess with the spread right now.
All right, let's get. Let's head off to our first commercial break. Come back. We'll continue talking Wolfpack basketball. Plus, we got the football games, NBA, all kinds of stuff to talk about. This is the Windmill Sports Show on ESPN 94. Welcome back to Windmill Sports Show live, Club Calneva, ESPN 94.5 FM. Make sure you know that you can get the podcast. It will be up at Sports Reno. Is it Sports Reno or Reno? Sports Reno, that's right, sportsreno.com. So with that being said, and the show, you can get all of our selections and follow our content on our Facebook page at Kenny B, ESPN Sports Handicapping. Kenny B, ESPN Sports Handicapping. Pack tips off tomorrow. We talked a little bit about that. We talked about that the whole first segment. 7 p.m. tip. Air Force coming to town. Pack's laying 22 points. Total is 140. I think we kind of all agree that the Pack's due for an offensive explosion. I don't see much resistance from Air Force. I think this gets to the. I think this clips the 140 easy. The only thing that does scare me a little bit is if the Pack plays defense and absolutely shuts down Air Force. But 60-80, I think it's right there, Josh. 60-80 is my number.
Yeah, I agree, Ken. That seems to be a pretty good ballpark projected score. And like I said, it's kind of an expected uptick in production from the Pack. I would only have the over there.
All right. UFC, Josh, this is an interesting UFC event tomorrow. It's what did you say? It's the first time ever Fight Night's been shown on ESPN?
Right. You know, they ended up having a contract. You know, for the longest time, Ken, the only mainstream channel, so to speak, that UFC was on was Fox. They had to deal with them. I want to say it was like 7 or 8 years, and eventually just had some good fights, and Fox did a good job with the production and everything, but that contract went to expire, and ESPN, for the longest time, seemed hesitant to get into the MMA business, but they realized, I think, just with the success, it was catching on, all the big McGregor fights and everyone else, and they finally said, okay, we want to get our foot in this market here, so the other contract expired. You know, the ESPN made a bid for it, and then now they have this big new deal with UFC and ESPN. Tomorrow night will be the first time they ever do it, but it's actually on that ESPN Plus network of channels and whatnot. I don't know if you've done this, Ken. It's kind of funny because I've never – I say rarely, but sometimes – you know, I'll do a paid subscription for something here or there, but when ESPN Plus came out, first I wondered, oh, Jesus, is it going to be worth it? Because I already have access to so much stuff. But then I realized, you know, they're doing this whole thing for, like, the digital platforms, and there's games you want to watch. So, Ken, I'd say about 6 months ago now or so, I jumped in there and just paid the, you know, it's $5 a month or $4.95 for ESPN Plus. It is actually an amazing access to the content you get, because if you do pay that $5 a month, you get everything on all their networks that you can take to your phone and or mobile devices. So it's cool. So I can sit there at night on my iPad and watch, you know, 8 different games. If you got bets on, you can just full screen have them. You get all that, but also their offerings like this, the combat, all the boxing's on the Plus, and they have all kinds of stuff, podcasts, everything else. So it's really worth it, but this is going to be the debut of UFC on ESPN, and it's going to be on the Plus network.
Jesse James just said, good value on Kratos.
Henry Cejudo.
Cejudo. I apologize for butchering these names. I'm not a big UFC follower or a handicapper. I'm a follower. So there are people that I respect their opinion, and that's when I get on it. So with this card.
It'll be interesting, Ken. I mean, I think that's a tough fight for him. He's talking about the main event, which is TJ Dillashaw against Henry Cejudo. And you realize Dillashaw is coming off those big wins against Cody Garbrandt. He's moving down in weight to do something because Cejudo is willing to do something Demetrius Johnson wouldn't. He's now, you know, that the bantamweight champion. Dillashaw is moving down in weight. He's usually 135. Cejudo's at 125. So you're talking the tiniest guys, you know, possible in the UFC. That's the only way they can market a fight in that division. Dana White's figured out is to move a guy who's got some marketability, that being Dillashaw. He had said all along he was up for, you know, doing the weight cut, and he said he could do it. It sounds kind of crazy, though, because a guy at 135 walks around 170. He's already tiny. But apparently, from what I hear, they had the weigh-ins today. They said Dillashaw was the first one on the scale. He made it no problem and immediately went into rehydrating and all that. So I feel like Dillashaw is an understandable favorite. Cejudo, if there's value on him, I think it's because of that. He's at his natural weight. The other guy died to make weight. And you wonder how much it's going to affect him. So I think it'd be an interesting fight. I'm not ready to jump in. I actually think I'd need a little better price on Cejudo to take a shot, but it could be a competitive fight.
Is this Greg Hardy, the football player?
Yeah,
it
sure
is.
Oh,
my goodness. Look at this. What do you know anything about this? You know what? Blindly, I'm probably going to bet against
him. If he's fighting his girlfriend, I'll take him.
Okay. If he... I'm blindly going to take a stab at this plus $4, Josh. A guy that's been – I mean, why not?
Yeah, you might as well, Ken. Here's the thing about Greg Hardy, right? So he obviously gets the NFL career kind of fell apart, and he starts getting into mixed martial arts. The UFC, I don't want to say signed it, but he did the thing on, you know, called Dana White's Contender Series, where he just takes basically, you know, the AAA of contenders, people who are trying to break through the UFC. He decides if anyone shows some promise, then eventually he might award them a contract. Well, that's what happened with Greg Hardy. He started training, so Dana White gave him a couple fights, gave him a couple, you know, tryouts on there, and he's basically demolished. I mean, so far, again, he hasn't fought the world-class competition, but so far, Greg Hardy stopped all of his opponents inside of a round and has been dominant doing so. He has such a lack of heavyweights, and not to mention name recognition, so Dana White eventually said, okay, gave him a real contract, and this is his first fight on a main card. There's no doubt that the novelty of him and the NFL recognition doesn't hurt at all. People are going to tune in because they're curious, you know, what it's all about.
All right,
and if he's any good. And you're right, I think, Ken, especially the first time being on a main card, I know nothing about Alan Crowder. I would say, I mean, Hardy's such a big favorite, you would assume that they try to put him in there against a very beatable opponent. But nonetheless, this is going to be a big step up, I think, competition-wise for him. He could lose.
He's minus $5, and Crowder's plus $4. The total rounds in this, Josh, is 1.5, with the under minus 310.
Right, so they're expecting a fast finish, obviously.
So Greg's going to go in and knock fools out, huh?
Of him so far, like, yeah, blinking, it's over. I mean, he's knocking guys out usually in a span of about.
All right, we're back. Sorry for the technical difficulties. We've been off for a few minutes, so we actually started talking about the Saints and the Rams. I don't know how much of the UFC that was missed. So with that being said, Saints Rams, Saints at home. This game's Sunday, 12-10, Saints laying minus 3. Sorry, sorry for being redundant because I really don't know what was said and what was missed. But, you know, you have the Saints minus 3, minus 120, so Nick doesn't want to come off the minus 3 yet with a total of 57. These two teams did play earlier in the year, John, and you did, and you, I think you made the point, you know, that earlier in the year the Rams were
quite at that point, I don't think.
Well, after week one, that dismantling defensively, you know, you kind of you're right. We didn't know. But with that being said, the Rams were a 2-point favorite on the road in the first game with a total of 57.5.
Yeah, I made some points a little bit ago. I'll reiterate what my standpoint is. Drew Brees versus Jared Goff here. The defense of the Saints is a clear step above what the Rams are bringing to the table here. Saints at home, Sean Payton at home. I don't feel more comfortable with basically anybody but besides maybe the Patriots at home. That being said, only three. You have a little a price at 120. It scares me a little bit. I would be a couple points higher than this. I thought the Saints are the clear team here. The Rams for a month and a half have not looked fantastic.
Since Chiefs came gone. I mean, does it not feel like that?
Yeah, pretty much since that point, since losing Cooper Kupp, since Goff has not been great. It's this screams the Saints to me, Josh. It screams handily. Not a blowout, nothing like that, but a nice 7-10 point win.
Yeah, and I think so as well, just in that, as you mentioned, I think the first one showed who the better team was. I was surprised. It seemed like the whole world, by the way, in the first one, it seemed like the whole world was on the Rams. I loved the Saints in that one. Turned out to be a big value. But this line, so I'll show you, though, there's close to 6-point flip in the line, but it even says, okay, if they met tomorrow on true.
All right, we're back at the William Hill Sports Show. I think we're due for a commercial. I don't know if we should hit the commercial right now. Haley, back. I don't know if we were due for a commercial right now. Sorry about that, everybody. But with that being said, we're talking about the Saints and the Rams. Saints -3, -120, 57 is the total, John. Drew Brees versus Jared Goff.
Yes. Saints, it seems like a light line to me. Saints -3, I thought it would be 4.5, 5.5 in that range. It seems like you're getting off a little easy, which is also scary, but I'm comfortable always with Sean Payton and the Saints at home.
Yeah, and it's difficult to imagine an outcome much different than the first one. I realize, again, the Rams climbed back from 18-point deficit, tied it up. When it comes right down to it, and yeah, Gurley was a big part of that, you still do have those concerns. I think about Goff on, you know, the big stage with a Super Bowl berth at stake. You know, can he really – there's a clear advantage there for Brees and the Saints. But when it comes right down to it, yeah, the Rams, yeah, lost the receiver cup, but they've also you mentioned, you know, the Saints are a little bit better on the defensive end. The home field advantage for this one is absolutely huge. And I just have a hard time. I think three, you know, that feels like a gift in the sense that if New Orleans wins, I feel like, you know, it's a minimum, right? I mean, that would be like a push, you know, they win by three. But I feel like it's probably more like they did last week. They were kind of in some trouble against the Eagles, down 14 early. New Orleans came back, of course, and didn't, you know, miss field goal away from actually covering the number late. You know, the Rams, they're powerful on offense as well, but it just, to me, it does seem like the setup really favors New Orleans.
You know, like we said, John and Josh. All right, we're back. And once again, sorry for the technical difficulty. I know that we're missing a lot of content right here, but it is the championship game. So with that being said, we're still talking a little bit about the Saints and the Rams. I know John has a pretty solid opinion where he likes the Saints, which, you know, I can't make an argument for or against that. You know, this is going to be kind of a prop day for me in game one. Like we talked about, the Saints won. They beat the Rams 45-35 by 10 points as a home underdog in that game. There were 2-point home dog with a total of 57. Obviously, you know, with 80 points scored, you know, it flew over the total. You know, the one prop Josh, we were talking about while we were off the air was the sacks. In the first meeting, there was zero sacks. They scored 80 points, Josh, 80 points, and there was zero sacks.
That's crazy. Again, I mean, both quarterbacks, obviously they have, you know, good protection, good receivers, and they get rid of it quickly. But you would just think, though, in an NFL game with so many great athletes on both sides, there would be at least one sack.
Well, let me add to that. And it wasn't like they were running the ball, Josh. The Rams threw for 391 yards in game one. The Saints threw for 346.
Yeah.
So they were throwing the ball all around the yard. The Goff, 28 completions on 40 attempts, 25 and 36 for the Saints. So with that being said, Josh, it wasn't like the game plan kept the sacks under, like they were running the ball.
Right.
They threw, how many times did they throw the ball? Or they threw the ball almost 80 times. You know?
Now, Ken, since you mentioned it.
53 completions.
Yeah, exactly. And this is, you know, obviously we'll get completely into the other game, but I feel the same way about Patriots-Chiefs, only because Mahomes and Brady, same thing. Neither of them ever get sacked, and even they have such quick releases. Mahomes, of course, has the athleticism to escape. Brady just has great protection. I take the under for sacks there, too. But
okay. So, John, any of these props, like you said, you know, both quarterbacks threw for a ton of yards in the first meeting. Goff threw for 391. His total for this game, 285.
Is there a will there be more than two quarterbacks throw a pass prop?
I think
that's only for the big game.
I was going to say,
but Nick's getting he's up in his prop game. That's why
I want the Saints to make the Super Bowl for that, because Taysom Hill every once in a while.
Well, you think what? Yeah, but what do you lay there?
I don't think you're laying anything.
No, I mean, what does Nick make it?
I think that's plus a couple bucks.
Two and a half over. It's going to be minus then.
I don't think so.
Wow.
You know what's crazy, though? It's funny you mentioned him, though. What a factor he's been is kind of just a versatile H-back type of guy. Taysom Hill started every preseason game at quarterback because Breeze never takes it down.
Yeah.
So he does that. You know, yeah, he played quarterback for like 10 years at BYU. You know, that's where he starts. But then the regular season, like, what are they going to do? Suddenly he comes in there as his H-back. He's tight end, catching passes. Yeah, they get him in there for like wildcat, like trick plays. And the guy is super versatile. He's turned in to be a real valuable player for them.
Absolutely. So some of the props here, John, were you going to say something? Go ahead. Looks like you're going to key something up there.
Well, no, I just that's a prop that I would like to bet over.
Longest TD for this game, 50 and a half yards.
Over.
Let me look at the I have the actual.
Yeah, that's huge,
right,
Ken.
Here.
And you know what?
50 and a half yards.
Player props. One I saw that I know it was already gone up. Actually, Alvin Kamara's total rushing receiving yards, 107.5 is what it says here on the card. I saw it just a while ago. It was up to 109.5 already. And that's because I think that's the correct one. It's one I did research quite a bit for Sportsline. And he's their leading rusher, second leading receiver next to Michael Thomas. He's just such a do-it-all guy. And I just feel like, especially since the Rams' run defense is more exploitable than Philadelphia, who has a solid run defense, they're weak in the secondary. I feel like Kamara is going to be such a key weapon here. I think he clips the over pretty easily.
109 is what it currently sits
for total of both.
Total, yeah, rushing and receiving yards. If you had the 50, let's look at this 50.5. It looks to be a shootout. Very, very high total, 57. Half point less than what it was in the first meeting. There was one play in the first game that went over 50 yards. It went for 72, but it didn't come until 3:52 of the fourth quarter. So
yeah, that was the game-ending one to Michael Thomas, yes, where he scored on that. Who's the Rams cornerback who keeps talking trash? And that was the one Michael Thomas scored on him.
John might know that.
Who's the guy who says who's going to come back? The Rams DB who is saying stuff about Sean Payton.
Akeem Tlaib?
No, Tlaib was out. Yeah, you got it.
Marcus,
that's the one.
Peters,
yeah. Tlaib was out, by the way. That's a good point. In the first game, he was out injured. Their pass defense has been better since he's been back, and they're playing more zone schemes. They're trying to limit the big plays, but that was kind of funny because, yeah, Peters had that beef with Sean Payton, and he got beat on that long touchdown to end the game.
You know, Josh, going back to what you like Alvin Kamara to go over his total yards, reception and rushing yardage over 109. The Saints in game one, Josh, they rushed for 141 yards too. So the Saints threw for 346 and rushed for 141. So you got to figure he's going to be 20% of the offense, right? I mean, basically that's where you're at.
Exactly. It's in short order. He's become one of the most it's kind of funny because with all the attention Breeze and the passing game gets, I mean, people know who Kamara is. I don't think they know he's explosive. I don't think they know what a great dual threat where he's like almost already on a par with the likes of Todd Gurley, Ezekiel Elliott.
It's a great combo.
That solid dual threat.
He and Ingram are a great combo.
Yep. Yeah, that's a real one of those real fire and ice type duels. That's a huge thing for the Saints the last couple of years is that not only to have great balance, but now one of the best backfields in the league.
What about Gurley, 71.5 yards? In the first game, the Rams rushed for 92 yards. Is that 71? I don't know.
I'd love to bet that over, but I think they're going to be trailing the whole time.
Yeah, and they're using C.J. Anderson a lot.
Yeah,
now,
they
too.
Are. I know that they've been doing that just because of Gurley's health, I believe. I think they would love to just feature Todd Gurley and run it as much as they possibly can, but I think that they're not going to have that option. So I'd bet that under.
A couple of the John, where's your money going on in this game? I mean, let's just talk about side and total right now.
Yeah.
And I know we're having technical difficulties, but we're going to post a lot of our prop bets between now and game time, and we'll get Josh's basketball stuff up. So Kenny B, ESPN Sports Handicapping, I want to get that out there just in case we do lose feed again. Kenny B, ESPN Sports Handicapping, we're going to get about our plays on our Facebook page. And you can also get the podcast what's there at sportsreno.com. With that being said, John, side and total for the first.
Yeah, it seems far too easy to me. Both these games seem really easy, which is not a good sign. I love the Saints. I think the Saints, it's a three, even at the minus 20. I don't see any